This is the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000.
All right, let's talk.
Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
I said it. I tweaked my pork stew.
I bet you did. How'd it work out for you?
Delicious. Tender. Tender and juicy. Panthers stink. They lost 24-6 to the Patriots. I don't know if this matters, but I think Sam Darnold is worse here than he was with the Jets. I really do. I mean, he always did dumb things. I don't know, man. He always managed to count. I shouldn't say always, because the Jets didn't win many games. But Darnold, within games, managed to counter the dumb with some really good, which made you wonder, man, he could be good. And the Jets, really for just buying time reasons, decided to move on to Zach Wilson, who has proven to be basically the next Sam Darnold so far. But Darnold isn't even doing anything good here. Like, there are no flashes of, hey, look at what Sam is capable of. We've had none of that. So, he was better with the Jets than he is with the Panthers, and I don't know what that says.
I mean, maybe. Like, I'm not even going to attempt an argument against
right.
that. Right. Because I can't claim to have watched enough Jets football.
I mean, I know
the gist of what happened up there.
Yeah.
But in terms of play in, play out, as I have for the Panthers so far this year, I mean, you might be right. It feels a little similar to me, honestly. It feels like a team devoid of an offensive line.
Yes.
Devoid of, I mean, there are a couple playmakers for Carolina, but largely it's really hard to operate. I mean,
okay. I'll take your word for it.
Well, I mean, you got Christian back now. I think DJ's a playmaker. I think DJ
can
play.
I like DJ more.
I think DJ can play. Outside of those two guys,
right.
which, again, sounds similar to New York.
Very similar.
They might have had two guys that were viable offensive threats.
100% agree.
So, I mean, he could be worse
right.
here. I'm not going to challenge that. But it just feels like a very similar situation.
Oh, I agree. It's a very similar situation.
Also, the inept coaching. I mean, it's like they're like mirror images.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. After the game, every question afterwards was about why does Sam Darnold suck? And I mean, that was my read. Seriously.
Why do you suck?
Read the they kind of asked Sam that. Go read the transcripts of the post game and you'll laugh. They asked Matt Rhule, I think it was the first question, why didn't you bench Darnold? They asked Matt Rhule, and I actually think his answer makes sense.
Thought it was he was gonna have to play his way out of it. You know, I just thought the shame of two of the interceptions were. You know, the second one, I don't know that was necessarily on him. I mean, he's throwing the ball. Lyman jumps up, intercepts it. It is what it is. But the first one and the third one, the shame of it was down inside the 30-yard line. We're about to get points and keep that a close game. So he was moving the offense, made mm-hmm. those two plays. Like anyone else, figuring what to do and just thought, you know what, when we got the ball back, there were 7 minutes left. Just wanted to see him take us down at the end and put us in the end zone. So wanted to, I pulled him 2 weeks ago. He played a really good game last week. I wanted to give him a chance to play his way out of it mm-hmm. and, try to get us at least in the end zone at the end. So just seemed like the right thing to do to me.
That's all, folks. Basically, Sam didn't kill us last week, so we thought maybe he wouldn't kill us again this week. I wanted to interject I would never do this if I was in the room, but if we were playing Mystery Science Theater when Matt Rhule, we were about to get points, you're about to kick more field goals. Stop it. Stop it with your stinking field goals. Anyway.
Guy loves a field goal. I'm telling you, it stems from his time in college. They're not good at him in college. So he's like so enamored by the fact that there are legitimate field goal kickers in the NFL. that he just can't stop kicking them.
So he said, this is a quote from, again, you should read the transcript. I don't want to lay things on one person, but we just...
I got that.
Oh, you have that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen to Matt Rhule not blame Sam Darnold here.
I don't want to lay things on one person, but we just can't continue to just keep throwing the ball up. Like, we got to protect the football. Like,
you don't need any more than that. I don't want to blame Sam, but Sam can't do that. Now, I don't disagree with Matt Rhule, but just say it. Just say it. They also asked, I want to move on to one quick thing before we get to Brinson. I mean, are you really asking Sam Darnold after the game, why should you be the starting quarterback?
Right.
Are we really doing this?
I thought the same thing. What's he going to say?
Yeah. You already talked to the head coach, right? Although I don't know the chronology of it, so maybe they talked to Sam Darnold first. But what is Sam going to say?
Right. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, you know,
I think PJ's probably better suited to be
better.
The starter.
And
also, it's not his call.
Right. Like, I felt bad for Sam, but whatever. He gets paid. All right, real quick, because I want to hear the head coach. Wake Forest blew a 45-27 second half lead in Chapel Hill in a loss. The score was very similar to last year's score when North Carolina won like 59-something. They win it 58, whatever it was. It was a basketball game. It was like exactly what we all expected. Remember the over, which was 76 points? It hit midway through the third quarter. They went over the 76.5. On the field, Dave Clawson said it was basically like Groundhog Day, and I kind of agree.
In a lot of ways, it was like last year's game. We jumped out to a lead. We had some injuries in the secondary. We got really thin there, and then we were just holding on. And so it just felt like a rerun of last year's game. You know, I'm proud of how hard our guys played and our effort, and I thought we fought the whole game. You know, our fans certainly came and supported us, and, you know, we're going to face adversity now for the first time. So we're not undefeated. We've got a huge game next week against NC State that we're going to have to bounce back and get ready for.
Yeah, I mean, this game didn't really mean anything. No offense, Wake wasn't going to be part of the college football playoff anyway, so it didn't mean anything, which is, of course, silly, but credit to North Carolina, who played good defense in the fourth quarter, but Wake lost this game on offense. Let's be honest. Their offense went field goal, interception, turnover on downs in the fourth quarter. And honestly, North Carolina's defense had something to do with that, so let's not say it was all Wake. Credit to Carolina's defense, but that's where Wake Forest lost the game, in those four possessions. Will Brinson, senior NFL writer, CBSSports.com, Pick 6 podcast moderator. Man, I was so excited for the Packers at the Chiefs a couple of weeks ago. Man, I figured Patrick Mahomes would kind of figure it out. And, man, Aaron Rodgers playing at a high level. And then we get that. And I don't even know what that was, but the Chiefs aren't fixed. The Chiefs are not that good. And Jordan Love is simply not ready to be an NFL quarterback yet. I feel cheated. Do you feel cheated out of that game?
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine how the Fox executives feel knowing that was supposed to be. And by the way, that's the second time that the football gods, or the COVID gods, I guess, have robbed us of the COVID gods. But you get the point.
Right.
Lowercase
yes.
G, of course. Respect to the big guy upstairs. The second time that the football gods have robbed us of Rodgers and Mahomes. Remember, Mahomes got hurt the previous time
right.
They were supposed to play, and then I think Chad Henne beat the Packers. tough sledding for them, man. You know, Green Bay steal. Look, I mean, I don't want to get in the whole vax conversation, but you know, the Rodgers thing. If he had been vaxed, it would have been substantially more likely he would have been available for that game. Not guaranteed by any stretch of the imagination. Certainly could have had a week where he, you know, didn't test, didn't have two consecutive tests.
Right.
But, like, that game could end up being the difference between the Packers getting the one seed and the Packers getting the two seed. And that's the difference between home field and having the bye or not. And for the Chiefs, like, I don't think the Chiefs, obviously the Chiefs aren't fixed and the Chiefs look broken.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to keep fading the Chiefs and that's fine. I don't blame anybody for doing it. They're like 4-16 over their last 20 against the spread. You know, betting against the Chiefs has been quite profitable.
Sure.
But I do, Adam, I do look at it and this is going to sound insane. It's going to really sound insane, but Patrick Mahomes is like 60-1 to win MVP and the Chiefs are 5-4 and they are two games back of the number one seed in the AFC and they have 9 games left. If he just suddenly somehow magically, miraculously flicked the switch and went nuke for 9 games, I don't think it's like that outrageous that we could say, all right, you know what? Like maybe it's Mahomes again.
Right.
I think dabbling at 60-1 is not that crazy. And if the Chiefs get really cheap for the Super Bowl, I don't mind betting them either because as bad as their defense is and as bad as their offense looks, we do know they can flip the switch. It just keeps not happening.
Just waiting. They just don't want to flip the switch yet. I think there comes a time where we have to say that there's an illness. They have a problem. I think it's primarily impatience.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? When they are content to play, to run the ball, throw short, although Travis Kelce has been not a non-factor. He caught a touchdown pass yesterday, but he has not been a really impactful player now for several weeks.
He had two horrendous drops yesterday.
Yeah, and he had the fumble the week before. I think it was the week before. He had the big fumble that hurt. So, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago because week before they beat the Giants, and somehow people were declaring them back and like, you didn't watch the game if you think the Chiefs were back after that win. But look, I think their offense is really sick.
That was a typo. But it was my colleague Pete Prisco.
It wasn't just him. Yeah, we don't have to pick on Pete.
Well, but here's the thing: is basically teams are not the teams that figured out the Chiefs. They just figured out the Chiefs' mentality, right? Andy Reid just can't have. You got injuries piling up in terms of the running backs. Clyde Edwards-Helaire hurt. The offensive line not playing well, and Patrick Mahomes is. And you saw there's a perfect example of it yesterday with Travis Kelce open underneath, wide open, no one anywhere near him. And Mecole Hardman streaking down the field, running towards the right side of the end zone, and Mahomes ignores the check down and tries to make the big play happen. He's pressing. He's leaving pockets. He's leaving clean pockets early. He's getting flushed out a ton. He's forcing the ball down the field instead of taking what the defense is giving him. And these defenses are just playing these, you know, two high safety shells that are like refusing to give up the big play. And they play more zone underneath so you don't turn your back on Mahomes. You know, occasionally Tyreek Hill is like scooting around and getting open because the play lasts, you know, they extend the play. But this sort of playground extension stuff that Mahomes thrived on against man, where, you know, safeties are crashing down. Nobody's blitzing the Chiefs anymore.
No. Nope.
And he's living against the blitz. They're getting home with 4 rushers. And it's just, that's the formula. Until the offensive line starts working, until Patrick Mahomes becomes more patient in the pocket, until the Chiefs are willing to actually commit to running the football, you know, I don't think that this offense is going to work. But having said that, you know, there is all the talent in the world there. And I do think it's possible that at some point we get an explosion game from them. And maybe that final drive, you know, maybe those final couple throws to seal things is the Kickstarter.
The best play was the first down throw to Tyreek Hill. Best play all game for Patrick Mahomes was the first down throw. That was it. That put Green Bay out of their own misery. Real quick, Will, because I want to move on. We're gonna have to take a break here. I want to move on to the Titans and the Rams from last night on the other side. Will the NFL fine the Green Bay Packers for 100% screwing COVID protocol? In the interview room, on the sidelines, will they do that or are they going to let this go?
The only reason they would let it go is if the Packers can prove or the Packers can leverage or threaten or whatever it would be the NFL that they also knew about that Aaron Rodgers was, you know, unvaxxed and violating these protocols and just ignoring them. As Adam Schefter reported, there are lots of other executives from other teams are not thrilled about it. I would guess that they fine Aaron Rodgers the maximum they can, which would probably be like $15,000 or something under the, the CBA. Real big money for Rodgers.
That's huge.
And then they also, but then they also kind of hammer the Packers, like fine them $500,000, which is, you know, I get that it's not, you know, that, I mean, it's a lot of money. It's not that much in the grand scheme of things for an NFL football team. But I would guess that they hammer them with that and then say, look, you know, this continues. You know, Rodgers could face suspension and you guys could potentially forfeit draft picks. Wouldn't be shocked if they took away like a 6th round pick like they did with the Saints.
A 6th round pick. I hope the Packers will be able to recover. All right, look, Green Bay knew, everybody knew. The NFL, when Rodgers, do you think the Packers didn't know that Rodgers appealed? Of course they knew he petitioned to be considered a vaccinated player.
Right? I mean, like, if Rodgers presented them 500 pages of evidence as he claims, then clearly the NFL also knew that Aaron Rodgers was not vaccinated.
Everybody knew. The Packers knew. Rodgers said the Packers knew. Rodgers said everybody in that locker room knew. So we're going. I don't want to tell Aaron's just. He's a coward.
You don't want to relitigate Aaron Rodgers' vaccination.
We're going to play Jonathan Jones' clip a little bit later on because I think I talked about it on Friday. To me, Aaron Rodgers posed as a vaccinated player, even using language. I don't want to tell those guys, meaning the other unvaccinated player, what they should do with their bodies. He posed as a vaccinated player because he didn't want to take the heat. Meanwhile, I got much more respect for Lamar Jackson, who just said, I'm not vaccinated. I don't think I'm going to get vaccinated. And didn't. Kirk Cousins, more respect for that. Guys who are willing to just take the heat and move on. And eventually, everybody's going to move on from Aaron Rodgers when he comes back and plays. But that's why Aaron Rodgers did that. He didn't want the smoke from everybody telling him that he was a bad teammate, blah, 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 whatever. So he decided to play a role.
By the way, he's now got a 90-day free pass.
He does.
He can still, obviously, he can test positive for COVID and would have to.
No, he won't get tested. I think they said 90 days he won't be tested now.
I think he's still tested, but he basically is now a vaccinated player from a testing perspective.
Oh, look at that. And good for him. Let me ask you a question about the Tennessee Titans. How did they lose to the Jets?
It is the Tennessee Titans season is just incredible, to be perfectly honest. I mean, they start off, right? They get blown out by Arizona.
Right.
They beat the Seahawks in overtime. They beat the Colts. They lose to the Jets in overtime. They then sort of have a toughish time with the Jaguars before putting away in the second half because they're the Jaguars, and then probably beat the Bills, Chiefs, Colts, and Rams.
All right.
I hope she's not driving around listening to your show. I mean, I hope she is listening to your show for your, you know, for ratings sake, but it's like being on the highway with my wife. Like, what if, you know, like you're losing the Jets and then slam on the brakes, hit the gas against the Bills.
But here's the thing about
overtime games.
Yeah, it's just, it's bananas. But look, the National Football League is crazy. I still think the Buffalo Bills are really good, and they scored 6 points against the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Ending an 81-game streak where teams who scored less than 10 points lost football games. The Jaguars did. Congratulations.
Leave it to Urban Meyer. He's a genius coach. But here's the thing with the Titans. That game last night, and I love Matthew Stafford and the Rams. I still think the Rams are one of the best teams in the league. But that game was decided on 2 passes. I don't know if they were consecutive passes by Stafford. But the interception that he threw to avoid intentional grounding, which he would have been much better served taking the safety at that point, and then the pick six, that ended the game. And it wasn't like the Titans were driving. Like, that ended the game right there. You handed Tennessee 14 points in what was really a pretty tight game, and then you just couldn't ultimately make the one play that you needed to make to score the touchdown, and you kept kicking field goals.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at what Sean McVay did on offense. It was, you know, good adjustments in the second half, but Chris Collinsworth and, you know, any other human being with eyeballs was noticing it in the first half, and they didn't adjust to it until they went and got the break and looked at it, which is kind of odd. But dropping Matthew Stafford straight back against a Tennessee defensive line that was had its hair on fire. I mean, Jeffrey Simmons, what a man. He was putting dudes in clown suits.
Yeah, he destroyed the Rams offensive line.
Yeah, but as soon as they started bootlegging Stafford and having him sprint right, just move the pocket at all, it really changed how the Rams offense was working. But at that point, they were already too far behind. In Tennessee, they just looked sloppy. They weren't, which is weird. It's a home game, Sunday Night Football. You think you come prepared, but Stafford was missing on throws, missing on reads. Guys were not necessarily making big plays in spots they needed to. And Tennessee ultimately played a better game. I mean, Kevin Byard said afterwards, after the game, that he wasn't supposed to be where he was
right.
On the pick six. He just he's like, I don't know. I sort of was kind of feeling.
Well, he read the play. You could tell he read the play right away.
He baited Stafford.
He went right.
I mean, to your point, I mean, the Titans didn't score very many points, on offense. They were not a great offensive team. That game only had as many points as it did because Stafford gifted them two touchdowns early. And, when you do that in an NFL game against a team with a quality team like the Titans, who's well coached, I think, in Mike Vrabel.
Oh, yeah.
You're putting yourself behind the eight ball. I think it is real interesting to look at the idea of betting on either Ryan Tannehill for MVP, Mike Vrabel for Coach of the Year, or maybe both. I haven't seen the Coach of the Year odds. I would guess he's not lower than 10-1 and probably 15-20-1, but they're the number one seed in the AFC right now. Tannehill at Caesars is 50-1 to win MVP. If the Titans get the number one seed without Derrick Henry, he's going to be in the mix for that. And especially coming off a week nine where, Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers didn't play. Josh Allen played poorly. Matthew Stafford played poorly. Lamar Jackson maybe moving up the rankings.
Lamar Jackson is going to win the MVP because he is the entire Baltimore Ravens offense. We got to run, Will. The man. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. See you, man. Sorry.
Chris Spitola is joining us. ESPN, SiriusXM host. You are a gentleman for giving us some time on the eve of the start of the season. Does it seem like it's too early, or I don't know. It just seems like this is too early to me.
Yeah, Adam, you're hitting my wheelhouse, man. I've been screaming at the wolves or howling at the moon or whatever the expressions are, man, for a number of years now. I just don't understand why we're doing this. It was one of the blessings, if you could find any, in the pandemic. It was one of the blessings of last season that we didn't start the year until Thanksgiving weekend, And I thought that was, even with the season being what it was, it gave you a glimpse of at least a later start time and the effect that could have. I don't know why we start as early as we do. They are so locked into having this tournament in March and not extending it into April. I don't know if it's because of the rights to that moniker March Madness or what, man, but it is too early to answer your question overall, and I don't understand why we won't come off of this position.
The thing is, we also have some games that kind of get lost in the football season now. There's not a ton of competition for Duke Kentucky tomorrow night, which will be a 9:30 start on the East Coast, which I don't even understand why we're doing that 9:30 game on, in New York City. But at least there's no competition from the NFL tomorrow night. But the rest of the, early part of the season, it just gets lost. Like the PGA Tour, which is slow to change, they realize that, man, we got to get everything done before football starts. So they've just crammed their season in to where it ends even before Labor Day. That's not the case. That's not the case with college basketball. I don't know why they continually go up against football. Let me just ask you real quick about Duke and Kentucky, and then we'll get to some of the other games and teams and issues. Chris Spitola joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. Would you like, as a player, is this a good way to start? Or maybe forget it as a player, because the player, you want to play the big games. As a coach, is this the way you want to start the season, playing against a team like Kentucky?
That's a really good question, Adam. I think if you're thinking broadly about the sport, and again, I going back to what we just talked about, I mean, I don't necessarily think the Champions Classic saves the season in terms of the start, but the Champions Classic is the best event in the sport until the Final Four. So I think if you're looking at it from that perspective, I think it's a good thing. I think as a player, I would want to do that. I think I'd want to measure up early in a season to see where I stack and where my team stacks, to do it on the stage that the Champions Classic is. I think as a player, I would like that. The Champions Classic, Adam, I mean, you remember, it didn't always lead the season. This is
no.
A new convention. This may only be 3 years old. So to answer your question, and it's one of the reasons Krzyzewski did the Villanova scrimmage. I mean, we had, even going back to when I was on staff, Adam, I had begged him on a number of occasions to get rid of one of the exhibition games to play in a closed scrimmage,
right,
just because it gives you the opportunity to measure yourself against a real opponent. That's, I think, the reason he did that this year. It was to be able to measure themselves against Villanova so that you're not going into that Kentucky game, which, look, in his last season, is a big deal. Like, I don't think he wants to lose to Calipari in his final season. So, like, I think the preparation for this game is indicative of, I think, how he feels about playing that caliber of a game early on. I don't think he likes it in an ideal world. I think he appreciates what it does for the sport. But I think that what they did in the preseason is indicative of how reticent he is going into a game of that caliber this early.
You're not allowed to say, maybe you are, because you have a different relationship with Mike Krzyzewski than we do, but are you allowed to say last season, I thought we were forbidden?
You know what?
I'm just asking.
We were going down, and I think you were there. We were going down for the media days, and my wife said, "Hey, don't use the word last." We were going to interview him for my SiriusXM show.
Yes.
And my wife said, "Don't use the word last. He's not doing that." And I said, when he came over and we started talking, I said, "Look, I know you're not using the word last. Can we use it for media days?" And so he was amenable to that. Which in my mind said was a bit of a compromise. Like, if you're taking a stand here on the word last, then it's forbidden in all contexts. But if you're okay with it in certain circumstances versus others, then that's, to me, a compromise and a window into maybe he's not exactly opposed. So I don't know, man. Yeah, I try not to use it, but it has been used in certain instances.
I am going to refer to this as Coach K's senior season. So that's the compromise I am willing to make. It is his senior season, and you can attach any connotation to senior that you wish. Chris Spatola is with us here. Let me ask you about North Carolina. I think they have a good team. They have a fair amount of returning players. They have added some, kids through the transfer portal and brought in some new faces. But I think that we're going to see a kind of a modern offense with stretch fours and just a different way of kind of thinking about North Carolina basketball. What are your expectations of this group?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be even close to the finished product that we'll see by the end of the year. To be honest with you, Adam, and I've seen both of these teams work out and then obviously watch their exhibition games. I think the ceiling for Carolina is higher, and that's not an indictment of Duke. I think Duke is physically ready to go now, and I think, you know, the two freshmen that I think are going to make a real impact in Keels and in Banchero, I think they are physically ready to go. They'll get better, but not, I don't think, exponentially better. The thing with Carolina and what I love about them, Adam, is their transfers. And I think, like, I've done a lot of Big 12 games over the last 3 years, and I've seen a lot of Brady Manick.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was a terrific pickup. Like, I think he was as solid a pickup in the transfer portal as a team could get. He's going to do all your dirty work. He's wise beyond his years. He's played a lot of college basketball, and he gives you that versatility that you're talking about. Justin McCoy, as solid as it gets, comes from a good program, has been coached, like, really just a solid guy. And then Darson Garcia had a pretty good year last year. I think he fits in really well. So, you know, outside of Caleb Love, you know, what is the next jump and RJ Davis and this backcourt of theirs, and outside of, you know, these two freshmen they have, both of whom are going to be good players. The reason I love Carolina, Adam, and the reason I think they have a higher ceiling is, one, because they have all these new pieces, but two, once these transfers, and it takes some time here with these transfers, but once these transfers, I think, get acclimated, and I know Hubert didn't start them in the exhibition game, but eventually I think Brady Manek finds himself in that starting lineup. I think that's as solid a pickup as a team could have. So I really do. I'm with you. They're not great yet. Again, I've seen them practice. I watched the scrimmage, and they're not quite there yet. But I think there's a real high ceiling for that team.
Yeah. Look, I don't know Hubert Davis like that well on a personal level, but I mean, he's easy to root for, and I think he's going to do a great job. I just don't think that they would have just handed the keys to Hubert Davis because he was the closest guy to Roy Williams. I think there is a reason why this was the plan. I think Hubert's going to be great, and I can't wait to watch him, and I think he's just one of the nicest human beings I've ever met. So, and he's also a hard worker, and he obviously loves the university. Let me ask you about two quick NCAA things before I let Chris Spitola go. And the first one is, I don't know if you remember the story. You probably do. A couple of weeks ago, Bob Huggins was talking about at Big 12 Media Day, you know, we should do our own NCAA tournament. We should exclude the non-power conferences. Does Bob know how the NCAA tournament, like, really hit it big? Does he get Cinderella?
Yeah, I think he does, Adam. You know, there's two things you have to understand. First, contextually, okay? You know, Bob Huggins is in a conference that was just rated by the SEC, the two of the best programs, if not the two best, not necessarily in basketball, but obviously the two best brands in that conference were just rated. That's the first thing. The second thing is Bob Huggins remembers a day when basketball was seen in many athletic departments as on par with football. And certainly we're not there anymore. So you have to understand the life that Bob Huggins has led. Secondly, like, I understand the mid-majors and the impact they have on the tournament. They add charm. They add drama to the event. They do not make the event what it is, okay? If there was no Power Five in the NCAA tournament, there would be no NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get that square first and foremost. I'm not downplaying the impact that mid-majors make, but there's no tournament without the Power Five. Look, I don't necessarily agree with his point that there should be a Power Five or Power Six with the Big East exclusive tournament. But what he was saying is not all that crazy in terms of disassociating a tournament that is worth as much as that NCAA tournament is from an organization that runs it in the NCAA that is a failing. Okay. So you now have a failing organization that is running a $1 billion event and an organization that is so dependent on college basketball to foot its bill year over year. That type of desperation has led, I think, the NCAA over a long period of time, Adam, to make decisions that are not in the best interest of growing that event. Now, we could be here all day discussing those points, but the large purpose here, the large point, and I think where I agree to a degree with Bob Huggins, is that the business model sucks. And I think college basketball is being taken for granted. I think college basketball, particularly at the Power Five level, is being used vis-a-vis that tournament. And I don't blame Power Five coaches and ADs for looking at this model and saying, wait a second, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And as football continues to grow, I don't blame a guy like Bob Huggins saying, wait a second, like maybe this financial split does not necessarily work in our best interest. So I wasn't actually as up in arms, and I'm glad he said what he had to say, because I think there was a lot there. I don't necessarily agree with all of it, but I think everybody just jumped on him because everybody thinks that these mid-majors are what make the tournament what it is. They are a part of it, but we don't have a tournament because of the mid-majors.
I agree with that entirely, and you're right. This is, I think, the basis for a much larger conversation, so the next time we talk, maybe we'll have that. I think this is the NCAA tournament is actually two events. I think it's the first 4 days, and I think it's crowning a national champion. And I think the first 4 days are the romance and the attraction for not the majority, but a good chunk of people who otherwise don't care but have brackets. And the interest on those first 4 days is wholly dependent on the mid-majors and the Cinderellas. And then we get to the crowning the national champion, which is a completely different event to me, and one that I'm kind of cool if we get rid of all the Cinderellas by then and just have the 16 best, but that's not the way it works. Final thing, and this speaks to your criticism of the NCAA. Do they realize that they could be a little flexible in the case of Kofi Coburn of Illinois and simply say that, yes, of course, this wouldn't have been a rule, this wouldn't have been a problem had it been done a month later, but because NIL wasn't enacted yet, that we have to not only suspend him 3 games, but then make him pay back the money to charity? That just seemed very inflexible and short-sighted.
Yeah, I agree with you on principle. Here's the dilemma I think they have, and you know, obviously they have there are a lot of constituencies and a lot of mouths that they have to answer to, and you know, I have been banging this drum that if we don't like the rules, then let's change the rules, and that's kind of the road we're now starting to go down.
Right.
And to your point, that flexibility you're talking about, but at the end of the day, there was a rules violation with him, so. And don't get me wrong. On principle, I agree with you in terms of the flexibility, in terms of saying, look, this is a changing landscape as we sit here and talk. Can we at least finagle this? But it would take a finagling. It would take an ignoring of rules that are currently in place. And there's a lot of folks who would look at that and say, wait a second now, this is a violation. And if you're going to hold this school accountable to this, then you have to hold this here, regardless of whether it was a day, whether it was a month, whether it was a year. Before the change of the rule, it was still a rule. So I become conflicted with this because, again, I agree with you. I'm a reasonable human being. I'm also a believer in rules. And if there are rules violations, you have to hold those who violate rules to account. And so that's where there's a little bit of nuance involved in just looking at it, saying, okay, the NCAA is the low-hanging fruit. They're inflexible, blah, blah, blah. And then blasting them. I mean, you got to have to look at it and say, well, it was a rule. So, like, what do we do? Just ignore it? And then what do you do for the next violation that happened or that's reported, you know, where that happened 5 days before the rule was changed? It's an easy thing to pick on, and I ultimately agree with you.
I guess it's such a low-level violation that I would have been – I'm always willing to take each case – separately, but again, it's easy to pick on the NCAA. And frankly, maybe I just wasn't paying close attention to what I was doing that day, and just said, "Yeah, that's low hanging fruit," and I'll pick it off the tree like anybody else. Happy Veterans Day to you coming up. If I can even wish,
do you
wish somebody Happy Veterans Day? I don't know if that's proper.
I think recognizing any veteran service in whatever way you do it is a good thing, my friend. So I took it as a compliment. And,
thank you.
And I would say thank you to you.
Well, thank you very much. Sir, you're the best. I appreciate your time. We'll talk soon.
All right, Adam. Be good, brother.
You've been listening to the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast. Part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. Or you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.